Chapter 1 "It's sickening," I thundered, as I stormed back and forth in the great hall of the Lunar Palace. "An absolute disgrace!" I felt the amethyst eyes of my wife, Aliona, as she watched me migrate from one side of the room to the other in a fit of rage. Her stark white hair was twisted back into a long French braid, while her raven-colored forelocks framed her porcelain face. She caressed her growing belly as she pressed her lips into a thin line of concern, and I took a deep breath and stopped to face her.
"You are right, my lord,"
Aliona said with the cool tone that usually eased my fury.
"No one should suffer that way."
"Son, you must form a plan," my father chimed in and frowned.
Ruslan, my adoptive father, was a fox demi-human whose bushy red tail swished back and forth behind him as he watched me pace. He put his arm around my human adoptive mother's shoulders and pulled her close, and Julia nodded her agreement.
"I do think making a plan of attack would be much better, Evan,"
she said as she glanced over at the two dragon brothers who had ignited my anger.
"We must know more about these people before you go."
Mikhail and Angelos had arrived from Afur last night while I was still in Odraine, and they'd shared the details of their escape from a band of criminals who had captured a number of dragons and tortured my brothers to carry out their evil schemes. The scars on the brothers' skin made my stomach twist into knots, and I'd done well to contain my rage so far. My first instinct had been to fly to Afur and set the entire group ablaze, though I had a particularly torturous plan in mind for their leader, who called himself Kosin. He would be the last to die, and I hadn't decided how quickly I'd make that happen yet.
"We know they must be stopped,"
Valera growled. My rage was nearly matched by that of my dragon mate and mother of our egg, and it seemed she'd returned to the murderous anger she'd felt when she and I first met. Back then, she was known as the Crimson Dragon, who lorded over the Crimson Canyons and guarded her treasures with unmitigated fury. I'd soon discovered she was not only protecting her gold, but also her sister's egg. And once we'd made our own, she agreed to stay in Hatra with both eggs within the city walls. We'd thought we were the last of our kind, and it only heightened the desire to protect the eggs from harm. But lately it had come to light that more than a few other dragons had stayed hidden from the wrath of the sage. Once I'd captured and she'd killed the sage, I sent out a message to our fellow dragons, and they'd flocked to Hatra for safety. Mikhail and Angelos were our newest arrivals, and their story had put a kink in my current plan to close the breach. I knew it was no small task to close the largest rift Inadi had ever seen, but the call to help my brothers felt just as large at the moment. I couldn't simply go on with this mission knowing they were in trouble. The very idea of leaving them there until I'd finished with the breach made my stomach twist into knots.
"My lord, if I may, we still have the mission at hand,"
Lyca said with a frown.
"With this new development, we need to ensure our plan is swift and successful, so we may return to our mission quickly."
As the leader of the Blue Tree Guild, Lyca was familiar with making plans of attack, and I didn't doubt the wolf demihuman had already begun to form a way to rescue the dragons. Her sapphire tunic was tucked into her brown leather pants, and her signature broadsword was strapped to her back as her steely gray eyes fixed on the map of Inadi laid out on the coffee table.
"We need to have a good lay of the land," Nikolaus agreed as he examined the map with his keen silver eyes. "Afur is strange territory with forests and the mountains we've never explored, and there are these odd symbols I don't recognize."
Lord Nikolaus, or Nike as I called him, was a fellow noble of the sword from Lady, and he'd spent the past year helping me with my missions. Even though he was a human, his experience with military techniques and diplomacy had been invaluable. Not to mention, he was a badass fighter, too. Having him on my side during our battles had been invaluable, and I wanted him there when I found Kosin and escorted him to the afterlife where he belonged.
"I believe it's a reference to the type of stone there,"
Ravi said, and tapped on the symbols.
"I recall seeing such markings on one of my father's maps. I can't remember what they mean, though."
The phoenix brushed her finger through her fiery orange hair that rolled down her back in waves, and left the scent of a campfire in the air. She ditched the robe she often wore in favor of a gold tunic with black leather pants that matched Laika's, and I realized Ravi was becoming more like the guild warrior with every passing day.
"Does it matter what stone it is?" I asked through gritted teeth. "I can move any stone in my way. I won't let Kosin and his men keep hurting my brothers."
"No one is suggesting you let them,"
Nokomis assured me as she put a gentle hand on my shoulder.
"We're simply advising you to avoid the guns blazing tactic you mentioned before, though I still don't quite get it."
Nokomis peered into my eyes with a soft, understanding look as she squeezed my shoulder. The snow leopard demihuman's brown eyes were watery with concern, and her speckled ears flicked atop her head while her matching tail swayed behind her lithe body. She was the newest lover to join my family, and I was reminded of her temperament as her other hand grazed over the Sword of Mercy. She wasn't likely to run headlong into battle, but she was a warrior for the right reasons.
"I know I shouldn't storm the castle yet," I sighed and rubbed a hand across my face. "I want to, but I've already learned my lesson about doing the right thing the wrong way."
Aaron, the god of punishment, had already given me a crash course into the way a bad choice could affect everyone around me. I'd wanted to go after the Demon King as soon as I had a few bonding ceremonies under my belt, and some additional abilities to boot. But he'd shown me what the future would be with that choice, and it ended with my family missing and probably dead, which wasn't a possibility I was anywhere near okay with. I had to learn to be patient, and this was another time where patience was due, even if it wasn't my specialty.
"Well, that's a relief,"
Polina chirped, and the trio of dryads giggled in unison. Polina, Trina, and Marina were the dryad sisters who were also part of my harem, and while they put off a frilly, girlish vibe, they weren't the women to fuck with. They were members of the Blue Tree Guild, and they'd taken on more than one fierce creature with their nature magic and swordsmanship. They'd rushed into the Great Hall in a flurry of purple robes and jade skin just now, and they hovered near Sky, to whom they'd been teaching nature magic. Sky was part Naiad and part Nepin, which made her an outcast in her home city of Eurosa. But it made her a one-of-a-kind lover as far as I was concerned. She had the beautiful cerulean skin of the Nepin people and dark chestnut hair currently pulled back into a ponytail that grazed her shoulder blades. Swirls and dots of white ink tattooed her collarbone and disappeared beneath her white robe, and she gripped the Sword of Youth on her belt as she awaited my decision.
"But how do we make a plan?"
Aaliyah asked.
"None of us have ever been there."
The fierce lion demihuman put her fists on her curvy hips and furrowed her brow. Her dark blonde hair was braided into a pleat that hung down to her waist, and her crimson robe was wrapped tightly around her athletic body. She rarely carried a weapon, but her retractable claws were all she needed to do damage in a fight, and I'd seen her tear many opponents to shreds in the blink of an eye. Next to her, Rebecca nodded her agreement, and the bear demihuman crossed her arms over her ample chest. Rebecca was as tall as I was and built like a bodybuilder, but she was soft and curvy in all the right places. She and Aaliyah had been connected at the hip since our return, and they stood together now as we determined our next steps to rescue the dragons.
"Perhaps you should take advantage of the wealth of knowledge your people now have,"
Mariah suggested from my spiritual sea. I focused on the spirit of the Sword of Healing who sat on the beach in my mindscape and dragged her fingers through the pale sand. Her robes, which barely covered her anyway, hung open to reveal her sensual figure, and she laid back as the sunlight danced across her alabaster skin. Her white blonde hair swept across the sand as the breeze tickled past her, and she looked completely calm despite my fury. "What do you mean?" I asked in a low voice.
"You have thousands of citizens in Hatra now,"
she clarified.
"Any number of them could be familiar with Afur."
"Mariah thinks we should ask around," I said, as my temper began to simmer down. "Maybe someone we've invited into our city has been there before and can give us some insights."
"That's a good idea,"
Naomi agreed with a nod.
"I'm sure we could go talk to a few people."
Naomi was a lizard demi-human and one hell of a mage, despite being mostly self-taught. She'd grown up only reading books to learn about her magic, and she still managed to be incredibly powerful in her skills. Now she tucked a stray magenta hair behind her ear as she blushed, and she turned away from the group whose attention was now on her. Then she subconsciously traced the scar from her forehead to her cheek as she bit her lip. The scar was another thing that made me want to tear into someone, namely her brother, for giving it to her. But that was an issue for a different time. She'd put him in some sort of magical coma for his attack on her, and I had to let it go for now. We had non-comatose people wreaking havoc on our world to deal with.
No, you're right,
Isabella encouraged her.
We should talk to people. If we know what to look for, it may be easier to get rid of this Kosin guy.
Naomi looked at the Nepin with grateful adoration, and Isabella's sapphire skin darkened with her own blush. Isabella's kaleidoscope-colored wings fluttered with happiness, and she twisted a lock of silvery hair around her finger before she looked at me with her bright turquoise eyes. Okay, so what do we need to know? I asked as I pushed my anger further down. I wanted to do all the things they said not to. Storm the castle, roast the thieves, watch Kosin burn into a pile of ashes. And yet, I had to push that aside and focus on what needed to happen, which was rescuing the dragons and getting back to our mission to close the breach. King Rodion, Aliona's father, had already said he was losing his grip on the seal that currently kept the demons in the breach at bay. If the seal broke for good, the demons and the Demon King would be free to roam throughout our realm, and the Demon King had already promised death and destruction to all of us on Anadi. I'd blocked him from invading my dreams, which was why Mariah had been spending so much time in my spiritual sea. But the only way to block him from our world entirely was by combining my power with that of each of the nobles of the sword. So far, I'd bonded with 5 other nobles of the sword, which meant I was halfway through the plan the gods had laid out for me. But I couldn't slow my pace. I had to handle the captured dragon situation efficiently, so I could stay on track to keep the Demon King in the underworld where he belonged.
Well, they kept us in a cave, Angelos offered with a grimace. It was always dark in there.
But it wasn't always too dark to see the other dragons, Mikhail added. I think there were at least 6, maybe 7 others.
Angelos and his brother Mikhail shared the same yellow scales on their forearms and pale blonde hair, and their blue eyes had become a little brighter with a good night's sleep. They looked less ragged than they had when they'd arrived, and I was ready to get the rest of the prisoners back to here to rest as well.
And we were always chained up, his brother said as he subconsciously rubbed his wrists. Not just any chains, of course. They were magical, and we couldn't shift while we were in them.
So no getting bigger to bust out or smaller to slip them off, I murmured. What else can you remember? How many guards were there?
There were always at least 4 men guarding the cave, Angelos replied. Of that I'm certain. But sometimes there were more. I think it just depended on if they felt threatened.
By whom?
Lyca cut in with an arched eyebrow.
Not sure, Mikhail shrugged. The guards always talked about them as though they were animals. I suppose we'll need to be prepared for the wildlife then, Nike said, and pursed his lips.
What about Kosin?
I never saw him, Angelo said with a shudder. Heard some screams from his victims, though.
And the guards always talked about how everything they did was by his orders, Mikhail added and curled his lip into a sneer. As though the man was a god who couldn't be defied.
Well, I can assure you he's not a god. I smirked at the thought of this man being faced with the gods I'd already met. And I wouldn't be scared of him even if he was.
But we don't know what he is,
Aaliyah pointed out.
What kind of man is brazen enough to take dragons as his slaves? A stupid one.
Valera scowled and drummed her fingernails on the table.
I say we slaughter them and hang their bodies in the cave as a warning.
My inner dragon roared in agreement, but I had to let my human instinct step in. While I like that plan, it only applies once we found Kosin and his men,
I said with a half-smile at my dragon mate. We need to plan the attack itself first.
We have to hurry up and save them,
Valera insisted.
Then you can finish off the breach. We can't let it stay open.
I could feel the stress coming off her in waves. And I suspected she was having an internal struggle between wanting to rescue our fellow dragons and making sure the world was safe for our egg to hatch. She'd been under a lot of stress since we'd found a crack in the shell. Though I'd told her I had a feeling it was a sign of our success. But right now wasn't the time to point that out. So I turned to my Aunt Emma for a little support. She'd grown close to Valera in the past few months since I'd brought her here from Earth, and she wrapped her arm around the Lady Dragon's shoulders and hugged her close.
Evan would never let anything happen to those eggs,
Emma assured my mate.
Let's take a walk, okay?
Valera sighed but nodded, and the two women meandered out of the Great Hall. I was grateful for my Aunt Emma every day, but especially now that she and Valera had formed such a close bond. Emma was the only human allowed in our secret egg vault, thanks to an enchanted necklace from Aliona and Valera's blessing, and she often took Valera's place guarding the eggs and checking for any more cracks. She'd been a godsend while I was away on our mission, and I was thankful now for her ability to get my dragon mate some fresh air.
So, I think if we surround these cliffs where the cave is, we can attack from all sides,
Lyca said as she pointed to the map.
I can gather the guild warriors, and we'll have plenty of people to find the cave and take out Kosin's men.
That's a large area to sweep without being seen, Nike frowned and rubbed his chin in thought. Even if we start on the edges and work our way in, we don't know the landscape well enough to search it thoroughly in such a large group.
Then maybe we should go small, I suggested with a shrug. We shouldn't need that many of us to rescue the dragons, right?
Small is good, Nike said as his eyes widened. Yeah, okay. So just a few of us go, and we can scope out the landscape. We can find where the dragons are being held, and then we can see how many guys are in Kosin's group.
And come back with reinforcements,
Lyca murmured.
I think that would work out well. We could also find the right place to attack. If the guards only move in groups of four to watch the dragons, there's probably a secondary location nearby where the rest of them go.
Okay, I think you two should go, I said to Lyca and Nike. You have the most experience with strategizing the second half of this plan.
Agreed.
Nike nodded his head and glanced around the room.
I think the dryads should go as well. They can help us navigate any natural elements we find.
Good call, I conceded. And Aliona will be with me, and Nokomis should come too.
Why me?
The snow leopard asked in surprise.
I have no experience with this type of mission. I had never even left Odraine until today.
Right, but you need the experience, I said with a smile. Trust me, you should come.
Whatever you say, my lord.
Nokomis agreed after a moment as she gave me a shy smile.
What about us? Mikhail asked and clenched his jaw. What should we do? I don't want to go back.
Angelo shook his head violently and crossed his arms over his chest.
I can't do it!
I wouldn't force you to, I assured him. You can stay here and be ready when the other dragons are freed. They're going to need to see some familiar faces. I couldn't imagine what the dragons had been through, but it had to be pretty bad for one to refuse to return, even to save the others. Angelos had apparently been traumatized by what had happened in that cave, and I wasn't about to make him return.
Really?
Angelos asked as he looked at me, and I nodded. The rest of you will stay here and help keep Valera calm, I said to the others. I don't want her worrying about the dragons and the eggs the whole time we're gone, and she needs her sisters to be with her.
We won't leave her side,
Ravi vowed. Well, I don't want her to go nuts either, I chuckled. Just be there for her. Give her something else to focus on. Make sure she still goes to the school to teach. Valera had taken up a teaching position at the newly established school, and from what I'd heard, her self-defense students adored her. If she could stay focused on her daily duties, it might be easier to keep her from losing her temper and attacking the caves or the breach herself.
We'll take care of her,
Sky said in a solemn voice. I know. I clenched my fist on the table as I stared at a fur on the map.
I just want to end all of this. You must get your rest first, son, Ruslan said.
It's nearly nightfall already, and a fur will be even harder to scout in the dark.
I fought the urge to slide everything off the table in dramatic fashion. I wanted to handle this now. I was already pushing my own patience levels by focusing only on the rescue first, and now I needed to wait until morning to go handle even that part. Aliona gently wrapped her arm around my elbow and leaned against me. I wasn't sure how she did it, but her touch always seemed to cool down my fiery temper, and I melted into her with a sigh.
All right.
We'll wait until morning, I agreed. We all need to get some sleep and food anyway. I know I'll need plenty of energy to fly that far.
I'm not so sure we should fly,
Lyca said as her furry gray ears twitched.
It looks like Kosin and his men would be able to see us fairly easily. See how this landscape is higher than the rest?
Damn it, I grunted. Okay, so we need to portal there.
I can do that,
Aliona said with a smile.
No ocean to worry about in a fur.
It seemed the decision had been made, and we'd leave first thing in the morning for a fur. I was partially relieved at the idea of portaling there since it allowed me to conserve my energy and get us there more quickly. But I didn't like landing somewhere I couldn't see. Also, flying made me feel like a fucking badass, and I'd choose it every time if I could. We ate dinner and updated my parents on the events in Narsglow. And I was a little concerned when Valera didn't show up to eat, but Emma popped in the dining hall to make them each a plate before she disappeared back into my dragonmate's room. I was grateful my aunt had taken to my family so easily, especially since it was unlike anything I would have had back on Earth. After we finished eating, most of my lovers took Nokomis on a tour of the Lunar Palace. Ruslan had spoken with the lady architects, and they planned to return to Hatra in the next 2 weeks for the additions I'd requested for my lovers, but for now, a few of my women would have to share. I knew they didn't mind, and I soon followed them upstairs toward the bedrooms. I walked into my chambers and tossed my boots on the floor. I knew I needed to rest, but my mind raced with thoughts of the Breach, the Demon King, and now Kosin. I had to make sure this world was safe for my children, and I wouldn't be able to do that until the Breach was sealed shut forever. When I laid down, I realized Aliona was not already in bed like I'd assumed. I figured she must have gotten caught up in conversation with one of my other lovers, so I settled in to wait for her. I drifted in and out of sleep, and I eventually woke up with my face buried in the pillows. I blindly reached out for my wife, but the bed was still empty beside me. Shit, I muttered into the cushion.
What?
Aliona asked, and I nearly jumped out of my skin. I sprang upright, threw off the covers, and spun around. The princess was sitting cross-legged on the floor with a small lantern on the ground next to her as she flipped through a book. I couldn't tell what it was from the bed, and I rubbed my eyes as my heart rate returned to normal. What are you doing on the floor? I whispered.
Reading this book and trying not to wake you.
She giggled.
What are you doing?
Wondering why you aren't in bed with me, I said, and narrowed my eyes on her with an amused smile. What book?
It's a book about gestation in various species,
Aliona answered.
I found something about the crack in your egg.
All my jokes disappeared as I crawled out of bed and sat on the floor next to her. What does it say? I asked, and my heart thudded in my chest.
It says cracks are a normal sign of an impending hatch,
she replied as she tapped the book.
If the environment is completely safe, the cracks are hardly noticed since they're rapidly followed by the hatchling. In our case, the environment is becoming safe, and the hatchling is picking up on the change in energy outside his shell.
So it's normal. A wave of relief washed over me as I considered the good news. My instincts were right, and the hatchling was simply slow-rolling his way into our world. Valera would be happy to hear it. At least I hoped she would.
It's normal,
Aliona said with a smile. Anything in there about centaur dragon babies? I half-joked. I knew Mona, the centaur leader of Lumen, was sure she'd have our child soon. And she said she would contact me when the time grew closer, but there hadn't been much information about exactly how much longer she would be pregnant.
I was happy to provide my seed in her quest for a daughter to take over her leadership roles in the future. But I didn't consider myself as just a sperm donor. I wanted to know my daughter was born happy and healthy. Even though no one seemed to know anything about a child who was part centaur and part dragon.
Nothing.
My wife sighed and shook her head.
I found information about each separately, but nothing together. I'm sorry, my love.
I'll just get in touch with her again, I decided as I conjured one of my magical messenger dragons. She said it was almost time for the baby to arrive. The tiny, multicolored creature turned a circle in my hand and sat patiently as I commanded it to check on Mona and the baby. Then it zoomed off into the night and Aliona closed the book with a thump.
Let's try to get some sleep, she suggested.
I helped my wife to her feet, and a smile crossed my lips as I reached down to her belly and lovingly dragged my fingers across my son's current home. Don't worry, bud, I said in a soft voice. We'll make sure your sister is okay. I felt the surge of energy and emotion I experienced when my son heard my voice, and I grinned as I guided Aliona to the bed. It was easier to relax when she curled her body into mine, and I awoke a few hours later feeling slightly more at ease. I was still anxious to rescue the dragons and get back to finding the other nobles of the sword, but I'd at least slept more than 30 minutes straight. We got dressed and made our way downstairs as the rest of my family meandered into the dining hall. Forsythe, the Hatra chef, had already laid out dozens of breakfast dishes on the table, and my stomach growled as I inhaled the scent of roasted peppers, chicken, and bread. He'd made some sort of salsa to drizzle over the chicken and peppers, and I happily doused my food in the spicy sauce before I shoved it into my mouth with a groan. I'd missed the dear demihuman's meals, and we'd only been gone a week. He'd avoided making eggs per Emma's request since Valera was so stressed out about our egg. But he easily made up for the signature breakfast item with plenty of other creative options, and I was here for it. It didn't take long for us to empty the trays on the table, and then I was ready to go. We had business to handle.
The Blue Tree Guild is ready to respond if we need them,
Lyca said as we gathered in front of the Lunar Palace.
I can send word to Piotr, and Naomi can portal them to us.
Do you think we'll need them? I arched an eyebrow at the wolf warrior.
Depends on how many there are,
she replied with a shrug.
It's better to be prepared for anything.
Okay, I said, and nodded before I turned back to my lovers who would stay behind. You be ready too. At the very least, I'll be sending the dragons back here for safety.
We'll make sure they have everything they'll need,
Rebecca promised.
We'll care for them.
All right. I hugged and kissed each of my women, and then I hugged my mother and my aunt. We'll be back soon.
Be careful,
Emma murmured. Always. I smirked and kissed her on the cheek, and she scrunched up her nose at me as I stepped back to join Aliona, Lyca, Nokomis, Nike, and the Dryads. Aliona had already begun her spell to open a portal directly in a fir, and we'd planned to land about a mile away from the edge of the cave since Mikhail and Angelos couldn't remember exactly where they'd been held. As soon as I heard the familiar sound of Aliona's magical electricity snapping through the air, I knew it was time. So we gave another quick wave before we stepped into the portal and walked into the shade of a large tree in a fir. The tree trunk was covered in a thick yellow moss that traveled up the bark and disappeared among the orange and green foliage above us. The trees seemed to grow in bunches of 4 or 5, and they were separated by soaring rock formations that were nearly as tall as the trees.
What kind of forest is this?
Lyca asked under her breath as she reached out toward the moss.
Don't touch it!
Trina hissed.
Yellow moss doesn't like to be touched.
Is it poisonous or something?
The wolf demihuman yanked her hand back with a grimace.
No, it just doesn't like it,
Marina said and cocked her head to the side.
I wouldn't touch you if you didn't like it. All right, then.
Lyca chuckled and shook her head.
So where do we go?
I have no idea, I muttered as I looked around at the odd variation of tree and rocks. I don't even see caves. Up there, Nike said, and pointed above us. Sure enough, each of the rock formations featured a cave that opened almost level with the leaves on the trees, which meant each cave would be about a 20-foot climb. How the hell can we search all of those? I clenched my fists as I racked my brain. I can't use echolocation for all of these. There are way too many.
You'll find them, my lord,
Mariah soothed me.
I know you will.
I just hope it's in time, I grumbled back.
What about your messenger?
Aliona suggested.
Does he remember where he took the messages about the sage's execution?
As soon as she asked, I felt what could only be described as a mental tug, and I jerked my head in the direction my inner dragon pointed. Over there, somewhere, I said. I'm not exactly sure where yet, but I think if we keep walking, we'll find it.
We don't know what else lives in this forest, Nike pointed out. We need to move with caution.
Something certainly does live here,
Polina said, and sniffed the air.
I've never smelled it before. There are probably many creatures we've never seen here,
Marina replied with a shrug.
Nature is full of mysteries,
Nicomas agreed. Then we'll make sure to be on the lookout, I said. We don't know what creatures the guards were watching for either, so just be careful. I led my group into the forest, and I kept the sword of Hatra in my hand just in case. Kosin's men had been worried about something here, but having no clue what it was made me wary. They obviously had some way of keeping the dragons locked up, so it didn't make any sense they would worry about a random forest creature. We crept through the forest and rocks, and we used the foliage to take cover from the caves above us. The last thing we wanted was to be completely visible to a guard on the edge of the cave, so we had to stay hidden. Then a flash of black whipped across my field of vision, and I held up my hand to stop our movement.
Did you see that?
I asked in a low whisper.
No,
Nike replied and narrowed his eyes on the forest ahead of us.
What is it?
I don't know, I said, as I took a slow step forward.
My lord?
Mariah rose to her feet on my spiritual sea and frowned.
I feel...
What is it? I pressed. Do you know what's ahead of us?
No,
she said and shook her head.
But one of my sisters, she's near.
Wait, besides the ones who came with us? I looked around us in confusion.
Yes.
Mariah trailed off, and I could feel her urgency as she searched for her sister.
I just can't quite reach out to her.
Suddenly, the leaves parted as a beast nearly the size of a car leapt out of the foliage and landed in front of us with a wild howl. Then the wolf bared his teeth as he lowered his head to attack.